nights always triumph!
Roundtable Live, Monday through Friday, 1 a.m. till 4 a.m. Eastern Time. Bring your mind, bring your ideas, bring your voice. King Arthur had nothing on us. Here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com.
Oscar's freeze. That's your cerebral cortex looking for an answer it doesn't have.
See? Even your brain knows you're screwed.
The blood is filling with adrenaline right now. Whether you know it or not, the heart's beating fast. It's getting a little harder to breathe. The neurobiological system is telling it to run, but your knees are too weak to move.
Fear is not real. The only place that fear can exist is in our thoughts of the future. It is a product of our imagination, causing us to fear things that do not at present and may not ever exist. That is near insanity. Do not misunderstand me. Danger is very real, but fear is a choice. We are all telling ourselves a story.
You're listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. 100% listener-supported radio. Reporting the danger. Unafraid. Right here, where information never sleeps. Revolution. 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 Radio! Radio! Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And now we're going to get back to your host.
Greetings. This is Robert Morningstar. And this is the Right Stuff Radio Show with my co-hosts, Scott Teeters and Andrew Curry. And today we're going to take a look back at the events of the past week, momentous events. And we're dedicating this show tonight to the man with the right stuff. And I'm speaking of no one other than President Trump, who apparently has had a bout with coronavirus and apparently has kicked its butt in 4 days. And we're going to discuss everything about this strange event, this strange confluence of events, as we head into the home stretch of the political season. And with that political season in mind, I'd like to begin the show with some rousing, politically associated music, incomparable music for presidential election campaigns. So we're going to turn to John Philip Sousa and Semper Fidelis. And we dedicate this also to all the Marines and former Marines in the audience. Here we go with Semper Fidelis. We'll be right back. Well, thank you, John Philip Sousa, the incomparable, semper fidelis, always faithful. And so are we. We've been at this for quite a long time now, and we're always here for you, the audience of Revolution Radio. And I guess I'm waxing philosophical right now because I'm feeling pretty good that the president has made it back home out of Walter Reed Medical Center, Walter Reed Army Hospital in Bethesda, Maryland, and hopefully safe and sound, and that there will be no recurrence of this disease. I have a lot of thoughts on it, and those of you who are tuning in from Facebook saw the headline, was President Trump dosed with coronavirus at the Biden debate? I have my certainties about that, and I can talk about that later. But I'd like to welcome Andrew Curry and Scott Teeters to the show and just say hi to each other, and then we'll get started with Scott, because Scott and I had a talk earlier in the afternoon about this subject, and both of us see a lot of strange things going around. I myself was apprehensive that the Democrats, in their desperation, when all seems lost, and it does seem lost no matter what the fake statistics say, just like they faked them in 2016, they're faking them now. But it's really gratifying to see the president getting back on the campaign, and a lot of strange things that we're going to talk about, like the setup, the travesty of the Chris Wallace debates, and how Chris Wallace is involved deeply in all of this background dirt that's going on. We'll reveal some of those things. But a long evening ahead. It's going to go fast, but we have a tremendous amount of information and insights. So first, let me turn to Scott Teeters, who has been working on this with us for quite a few days. So Scott, take it away.
How you doing, Robert? Good to hear you.
Well,
before we jump into the minutia, because it's so much fun, since you played that John Philip Sousa piece, it popped into my head. I was a little kid watching it. It was probably Saturday night at the movies, early 60s. A TV network started putting feature-length movies on television. Of course, there were commercials. But it was a big deal, you know, like watching a full-length movie in the evening hours, you know. And I remember laying on the floor one time watching this movie about John Philip Sousa. And so I just quickly looked it up while you were playing the music. And the movie was from 1952, and the movie title was Stars and Stripes Forever. And it starred Clifton Webb. I don't remember him. He played John Philip Sousa, actually. No, I don't think anybody remembers Clifton Webb. Well, I'm sure his kids do. Deborah Padgett and Robert Wagner were in the film. Of course, Robert Wagner was just a wee lad, but a bald-faced boy, just about. And Deborah Padgett ended up, she was in the Elvis Presley's first movie, Love Me Tender, the beautiful Deborah Padgett. But yeah, it was quite a movie. I as a little kid, I remember just being really feeling the energy of those of that kind of music. It didn't really stick with me because it's not stuff I like to listen to these days, but it's got a unique feel to it. It's there's really nothing quite like it.
I was going to say that It brought back childhood memories to me, too, because I had the honor, the privilege of marching in a lot of parades in New York City. And I marched to that Semper Fidelis and National Post March and all of the others. And it was so uplifting, and it filled us with a sense of patriotism, love for the country, and pride in our country. And I cherish that. I marched in countless Columbus Day, Memorial Day, and St. Patrick's Day parades. I would say at least 15 over the course of time. And they are unforgettable. And once you start walking, marching, to the beat of a Sousa march, you don't want to stop. The thing I was going to say that I liked about playing it on my show today, our show, is that whenever you hear this song anywhere, played anywhere, at a convention, on television, it sparks you up, but they always cut it, you know, and you don't get to hear the entire melody and the entire march. So I'm happy that we were able to share an entire Semper Fidelis.
So that music got you all fired up, huh?
Yes, indeed.
At the end of the parade, you thought you could march all the way to Philly, right?
That was about
only 100 miles. You know.
Thought about going to Washington. Hey, did you see the helicopter landing at the White House this afternoon? That was the hairiest thing I ever saw. The helicopter.
I didn't see it.
Oh my God! He came in and he put the helicopter in between trees, and then he turned it around. And I thought, and you know, I could see some of the pine needles flying from the rotor. I was like, oh no! Please, just get him home. Don't crash into a tree.
No hot landing, please.
It was one of the most amazing helicopter landings that I've ever seen in my whole life, and I've seen quite a lot. So, anyway, welcome home, Mr. President.
Indeed.
Made it there. And aren't we gratified at the outpouring of love, affection, and people who showed up at the hospital? Scott and I were talking about this phenomenon that was sparked by this crisis. It certainly was a crisis. And what it did is it brought out all the closet Trumpers. I think this is really the beginning of the season, the political season, where people are going to show their true colors. So let me turn it back to you.
Sure. Yeah. Well, in the last week, we've seen some extraordinary things. And since you were just talking about the president coming back to the White House, et cetera, I think it was perhaps on Monday night. It's either Monday night or Wednesday night. President Trump was doing a rally, and all of a sudden he stopped talking at one point, and because the people in the audience were chanting, and what they were chanting was, "We love you, we love you," and President Trump heard it, and it sort of stopped him in his tracks. I think he said something to the effect that, "Wow, but nothing like that's ever happened at a rally or a political event." And I'm sure he's absolutely correct. I've been watching political events, gosh, since the Ford years, and you see people paying respects, or they're just being polite and not really saying much of anything. But never have I seen people in an audience at a political event or rally say to the politician, the leader, the person up front, "We love you, we love you, we love you." And then we saw it played out over the weekend. One person, it started off as a vigil with some people out front of the hospital where Trump was staying, and somebody had an American flag and somebody else had a Trump Pence flag. And apparently it just kept growing and growing and growing. And someone in the group was interviewed over the weekend, and they said, "Well, since President Trump can't do any rallies, we thought we'd bring the rally to him." When does that ever happen before? When has that ever happened before? It's called never. President Trump has truly touched the hearts of many, many Americans, and I think we're going to be in for it. The Democrats are going to be in for a rude surprise in 4 weeks from tomorrow. 4 weeks, finally. It's coming down to the wire here. Only 4 more weeks left to go. But what a week it was. Man, we had the first debate, or should we call it a food fight? That's a good word for it, a food fight. A lot of people took issue with the format of the debate. Each candidate was allowed to speak supposedly uninterrupted for 2 minutes. And that doesn't sound like a whole lot of time. Well, 2 minutes, what can you say in 2 minutes? Well, as President Trump was given the courtesy of going first, and then was Vice President Biden's chance to go, and he got started, and didn't take too long, and he began to unload false claims after false claims after false claims until Trump just couldn't not call him out for it. And that's when he started to interrupt. And, of course, Chris Wallace tried his best to rein in these two guys. But you could clearly see it was like trying to herd cats, that old expression about herding cats being nearly impossible. And Vice President Biden was really over the top. And I realized this is a fight, and it's not supposed to be nice, and it's not supposed to be all polite. Oh, my friend on the other side of the aisle nonsense. Now, you can get your point across. We've seen debates for decades now over the television where candidates are able to get their points across without doing some of the things that Joe Biden was doing. At one point, Joe Biden told Trump, he said, yeah, keep yapping, man. He also called Trump a clown multiple times. Let's get this clown off of here, et cetera, et cetera. Biden even said to him, will you shut up, man? When you start to hear Biden adding man at the end of a statement, you know he's starting to get PO'd. And he was starting to get PO'd. Will you shut up, man, he said. Then he proceeded to call Trump over the course of the 2 hours a racist, a liar, Putin's puppy, and he called him a damn liar. As I mentioned, Chris Wallace was clearly not in control. We almost got to see Joe Biden totally lose it when he misunderstood Trump's inquiry concerning Hunter Biden, and Biden thought that Trump was saying something about Joe Biden's deceased son, Beau Biden. That's not who he was talking about. He was talking about Hunter Biden and all of Hunter Biden's miscellaneous shenanigans. I guess it was on Thursday or Friday we were watching a program, and they were I think it was Tucker Carlson, and he was talking with his guest about the debate. And so they split up the screen. So you saw Tucker and the guest, and then the big part of the screen you saw Joe Biden from one of his rallies, and he wasn't wearing a mask. This was before Friday, so Joe Biden was not wearing a mask. And you got to see his full face, and it's really important to be able to see people's full face so you can get a sense of what they're talking about, how they're feeling about things. It's important to be able to see people's faces. So I'm watching listening to these two fellows talking, and I'm looking over at Joe Biden at his most recent rally, and what I saw was the face of an extremely angry, angry man. You can check this out for yourself. Just put on any of his, I don't know, it's not a rally. He does these little events where a handful or a couple dozen people show up. Watch one of them on YouTube and mute the sound, and you'll see what I mean. He scowls. He's bitter. When he's talking, he's condemning. He's constantly referring to President Trump as what he has done. He doesn't want to say his name. He's not going to honor the presidency by using the president's name. He just refers to the president as he. He's done this and he's done that and it just goes on and on and on. This nonstop condemnation. He's angry. He's very short tempered. We've seen Joe Biden lose it on the citizens out on the out stumping. People ask him questions that he doesn't like, and they won't take his non-answer answers. That's when he starts to get short with people. We've seen him do this in interviews. He did it on an interview with a black host of a radio program, and when the host was asking him about, I think the host was asking him basically, why do Democrats seem to think that they own the black vote? And he got really pissed off. And I think that's when he said, well, if you aren't voting for me, you ain't black, man. And he asked another interviewer one time who got under his skin. It didn't take much to get under his skin. He said, "What, are you on drugs? Are you a drug addict? You even drug tested?" It's hard to tell what he's thinking when he does these kinds of things, if he thinks he's coming off as a tough guy or what. But what he actually comes off as a thin-skinned, short-tempered, very angry person. One of the other things that came that was observed during the debate was President Trump was asking Vice President Biden to tell Americans right now, we're all watching, we're all listening, tell us who's on your list for Supreme Court nominees if you should win the election. And he said, I'm not going to tell you, man. You don't deserve to know. Wow. We the people don't deserve to know. Even Biden supporters allegedly don't deserve to know who he wants to put on the Supreme Court. And it's obvious what he's doing. He's not about to publish a document saying these are the people that I think would be good Supreme Court nominees, the way that Trump did. He's not going to do that because you know darn right well his list is going to be filled with a lot of radical left liberals. And he doesn't want to catch the heat for it. So he's not going to answer the question. So he refuses to answer the question about the Supreme Court, his potential picks for Supreme Court nominees. And he also refused to answer Trump's questions concerning Hunter Biden. A new wrinkle came out regarding Hunter. Hunter's got a lot of wrinkles, it seems. It seems that this is an interesting story, but Hunter Biden got a $3.5 million put in air brackets loan from the wife of the ex-mayor of Moscow. You gotta scratch your head on that one. Why the hell would the wife of the ex-mayor of Moscow be loaning Hunter Biden $3.5 million? Nobody loans me that much money. I'll bet he didn't have to pay it back either. Biden didn't want to answer the question about that. He didn't want to talk about Hunter Biden coming home from China with the Bank of China with $1.5 billion as an investment. I'd love to know what that got invested in. He wouldn't answer how it was that Hunter Biden got $1 million+ a year for being on the board of directors at Burisma with no experience. I mean, boards of directors are interesting groups of people. Boards of directors are there to they specifically want people with a wide variety of expertise in many different areas so that people can offer different perspectives on things. And they generally get together about once a year at their board or their annual board of directors meetings. Well, Hunter Biden was getting nearly $1 million a year for being on the board of an energy company. And he had absolutely no experience. And he couldn't, so Biden wouldn't answer that at all either. And then there's the curious video that everybody can go out there and watch where there's Joe Biden at a Council on Foreign Relations meeting bragging about getting the Ukrainian prosecutor off the case that was investigating Burisma corruption. That's the same company that Hunter Biden got the seat on the board of directors. Joe Biden is on this video saying that he told the Ukrainians, you got to fire the prosecutor or you're not getting $1 billion. He was over there to talk about $1 billion loan. And then he brags and he says, I told him, listen, my plane leaves in 6 hours. I'm out of here and you're not getting the money unless you get rid of that prosecutor. And then what do you, son of a bitch, he says, that's a quote, they fired the prosecutor. How about that? Wow, no more prosecution in the corruption of Burisma, and my son is safe. What a guy. What a guy. So that's my take on the debate or the food fight. We talked a little bit about Trump getting the flu, the Chinese flu. We should stop calling it the coronavirus, folks. It's a distraction. It's the Chinese flu. It came from China.
Kung flu.
Yes, the Kung flu. Well, we don't want to get too nasty. It's the Chinese flu. It came from China. China. It's very, very suspicious. And now we're right on the line here with conspiracy theory, but we're going to go past that line. It is totally suspicious that 12 of President Trump's inner circle that were attending the debate practice all came down with COVID-19. I'm sorry. Bad habit. the Chinese virus. So most of the debate team comes down with the Chinese virus. And, you know, you're not supposed to ask any questions about that. Now, on Saturday morning, I was watching Fox and Friends. Dan Bongino was on, and Dan has been in the White House many, many times. Well, he was a Secret Service agent. He used to work there. And he said, you can't get on the grounds. You cannot step on the grounds of the White House without being tested. And the closer you get to Trump, the more and more tightly controlled everything is. Everybody that sees the president is tested. You cannot get close to the president without being tested. So you got to ask the question, how did so many people in the Trump inner circle get the virus in an area that is heavily monitored, tested, and controlled? How in the hell does that happen? It's just a happenstance, you know, with 12 people in the office. It's really a crazy, crazy thing. Let's see. Now, also concerning the White House, what we've been seeing now for almost 4 years is a nonstop stream of leaks coming from people that work inside the White House. Now, we tend to think that the people who work in the White House are working for the office of the President of the United States, and they are not partisan. This is an absolute lie. It's not true, and it's probably always been this way, and I would reference back to the Clinton years. Remember the Monica Lewinsky scandal? Well, do you also remember Linda Tripp? Linda Tripp, she was worked right there in the president's office. Well, she did not like Bill Clinton at all. She was there through the Bush years, and she was very, very good at her job, and Clinton decided to keep her on. But she hated Bill Clinton. She loathed Bill Clinton. And when she figured out rather quickly that some hanky-panky business was going on with the president and Monica, she proceeded to deceive Monica by inviting her into her confidence. And all she was really doing was manipulating this girl because of her hatred for Bill Clinton. So do people that work in the White House, are they all gung-ho, rah-rah, President of the United States supporters? No. They're people with opinions, and they vote all the time. They vote every year. And clearly, we have a lot of people in the White House right now working in there who are willing to leak sensitive and secret information, things that they should not be doing, things that are borderline or over the border, treasonous, and they're still there. So as the campaign continues on and, you know, gets hotter and hotter week by week as we approach Election Day, could there possibly be individuals inside the White House that somehow or another managed to contaminate perhaps the food or the water or the silverware or the glassware that was being used inside the room where the president and his team were practicing for the debate? It's just awfully, awfully suspicious. It really is. The other interesting thing that came out last week was some new documents concerning Russiagate. And documents came out last week that clearly connect former President Obama, Vice President Biden, Hillary Clinton, Rice, Comey, Clapper, Brennan, Strzok, Page, McCabe, and others as knowing and orchestrating the entire Russia hoax as a way to, when they first started, as a way to prevent candidate Trump from winning, and then when he won, in order to subvert and destroy his presidency. This is treason, folks. It isn't anything other than that. This is treason. And I can't help but wonder, here we are, a month away from Election Day. We're, 3.5 months away from when the president, whoever wins the election, will be sworn in the end of January. Where's the Durham report? John Durham is this, you know, top-notch hot guy that the attorney general has commissioned to get to the bottom of this. And we've been hearing now for month after month that the Durham report is going to come out soon. And here we are a month away from the election, and we still don't know anything about the Durham report. So
I think what's coming is such a shocker that the nation has to be prepared very slowly, you know, time capsule, you know. And the thing is that people who pay attention, you hear the reports from the news and they leak them with documents. The document that they're talking about is devastating. It says explicitly that Comey said he knew that Hillary Clinton was using the Christopher Steele dossier as a tactic to use against Trump in the campaign. It says it as explicitly as that, what I just quoted to you. And the other thing about the chicanery, that's a really good old-fashioned word for crookedness, chicanery. And it's something that's really associated with politics and the Congress. But it's also in the media. The idea of setting up a debate that had no rebuttal period was kind of a twisted thing to do on the part of Chris Wallace. And as I was telling Scott earlier, Chris Wallace is a dirty player. His performance was so outrageous that even the people on Fox News criticized it. But somebody criticized it even more directly by posting four pictures the following day or 2 days afterwards. Someone on Twitter posted four pictures of Chris Wallace on a boat trying to disembark. He was reaching up to get a hand from somebody who was on the dock. And the person on the dock was none other than Jeffrey Epstein. Oh, let's see, whose name appeared today? Some illustrious names. Oh, yes. You can't believe it. It was just before the show started, I went to Facebook, and it said that John Roberts, Chief Justice John Roberts' name is on the Lolita Express passenger list. That's mind-boggling.
The Supreme Court Justice.
I was mind-boggled.
Has been to Pedo Island.
Yeah, he's been to Pedo Island. So anyway, before I get into my dissertation on assassination.
Do you want to touch on masks now or later?
Let's do the mask later. I want to turn to Andrew because he's waiting very patiently.
Indeed.
And I want to get his take. He sees it from a different vantage point across the border from the great Northwest, looking back on this crazy eastern seaboard. I have to call it that, what's going on the eastern seaboard. And that's because the mass media is centered here. And what they're doing to try to turn this into a negative for President Trump, criticizing him for taking the ride around the block to see his fans out there in the cold, rooting for him. Oh, you know what? This really takes the cake. I swear to God, this really takes the cake. The president got off the helicopter, as I said, a fabulous Marine One helicopter landing between trees, turning it around to face the president in the right direction. President comes off, and one reporter starts yelling questions, and the president's obviously not answering any questions, and it's been announced that he's not going to answer any question. And this dork reporter, he has to be a dork, yells out to the president, "Mr. President, do you think that you're a super spreader?" And he just gave him his thumb up. Sit on this, man.
Yeah, really.
Imagine that. "Mr. President, do you think that you're a super spreader?" And so he's going into the White House. And, you know, I'm flipping back and forth. I set up a new cable system where the three main channels are just one flick apart, one up and one down, you know, to go between messed up NBC and the Communist News Network, CNN. And I couldn't believe it. He's going into the White House and he's saying, "Look, he's not wearing a mask. And he could be spreading it to everybody. Look at all of the reporters. The reporters are saying, 'I hope he doesn't breathe on me.'" The degree of ridicule is...
I got a better one.
Unbelievable.
This just popped up. I got a better one. This one just popped up. Washington Post columnist Jennifer Rubin blasted the medical team at the Walter Reed National Military Medical Center today, going so far as calling for the defunding of the hospital after President Trump announced that he would be returning to the White House that evening. She said, any MD who publicly endorses this insanity needs to lose his or her license, period. Rubin declared in one of several tweets. Another one she wrote, Congress might want to defund Walter Reed. It is a public health hazard. These people are certifiably crazy.
Insane. Yeah, well, we have seen it. We have seen half the nation, I wouldn't say half the nation, a third of the nation is certifiably
defund Walter
Reed. Neurotic and paranoid, and many of them are way over the border and into insanity.
That's Trump derangement syndrome. What do you think, Andrew?
Let's have it.
Well, I'm going to take a slightly different turn on this, guys. Listen, last week, when was the debate again? Was it last Tuesday night or was it Monday night?
Tuesday.
It was Tuesday night. And I was working frantically, so I had, the small screen up on my computer so I could have one eyeball on the screen. But really all I could hear was the audio. And it was very unnerving to listen to. But when I didn't have my eyes on the screen, I really noticed that it was Joe Biden that started the tomfoolery at first. There's another old word for you, Robert. And he was the one that was interrupting and, making these and all these, interruptions. And it was,
come on, man.
Wallace. Yeah, it was all that was going on. And Wallace was, very much deflecting for Biden. Like you could really see it. And he would come back and hammer at President Trump while giving, I think, Biden a pretty easy ride and really, escorting him quite comfortably through the debate. I mean, that's one thing that I noticed. And then I watched it again. Well, actually watched it for real. And it was, when you go through something a second time, you're actually somewhere in your psyche, you're anticipating what's coming up. So it seemed more level-headed, but again, I very much noticed and I watched the body language, and it was Biden initiating all this stuff. But you know what the really weird thing is, guys? And Robert, this is something that, we've sort of discussed in the back channels and, sort of the bigger cycles, which I touched on your show yesterday. A day after the debate, now I don't know if I've said this on air before, but I will right now. I honestly believe that we human beings have abilities that are so untapped. And I think we use devices, computers, the internet in ways that if we could tap into our real essence, the real power within us, we could probably have connections, let's call it psychic, that would be so extraordinary, we wouldn't even need the internet. So here's an example, and we can have countless shows on this. We know this, people might call it coincidence, but we've got, the Princeton eggs that have showed this kind of thing. I mean, before 9/11 happened, people were having all kinds of dreams of people coming out of buildings and planes flying into. So we know that there's something to this, and we know that the powers that be are investigating and have been heavily involved in it, whether it be the whole, Russians using, remote viewing for spying, and then the Americans doing the same thing, and amongst many other nations, I'm sure. But on Wednesday, I woke up, because often what I do is, I try to have a sensibility about myself, but then I try to tap into what I call the ether, right, Robert, like the bigger picture. And I felt this very low, ominous sense, and I looked at my older son and I looked at my wife and I said, are you guys getting a feeling today, like it was Wednesday, of something not quite right, something not quite ominous, but a little bit dark? And my son turned up, my older son, he's 21. He said, Dad, I feel it too. And then look what happens. Trump gets this situation right with the COVID. All I'm saying is that there's a critical time right now that I believe humanity is getting closer, you guys, to a moment where we're going to be liberated in unbelievable power, which is going to be a lot of responsibility to handle within ourselves. And something wants us not to touch into that. I know I'm moving off in a different direction, but I think it's important to trust our gut and to listen really closely. And You know, when I'm sort of processing a lot of this news, and you know, you get so fuzzed in the head, and you just have to sort of stop it and quietly listen inside. And this is why, again, I come back to President Trump. This guy is not perfect. Nobody is. But I think that he has the right kind of swagger that's necessary for the times that we're in right now. And he's a good man. He's a good man. And they can't – you know, he doesn't even drink and smoke. Right. This guy's a good man. And I – you know, either he is the devil incarnate with everybody hating him, you know, all the news everywhere, you know, putting him down in our country, everywhere else, or – the mainstream news and our mainstream outlets are so corrupted, so ruinous, that they just can't stand someone who is telling the truth. And that's Donald Trump, in my opinion.
Absolutely right.
And there it is, guys. I mean, I this is how I feel. And I mean, I had a bunch of other things prepared. And I'm going to tell you one thing that's happened. Today was very interesting. Mayor Doug Ford, he's the mayor of Toronto. You know, in Toronto, sort of, they try to think of themselves on par with New York City, and they are a big city. It's a big, big, big city in Ontario. Well, he is having a bit of a food fight with his health director, with the city health director, some lady named Dr. Eileen Davila. She wants to shut down bars and restaurants because there's been the so-called, well, the spike in COVID cases. Again, they never emphasize how many people are in the hospital and how many people are actually dying. But those, that part of the graph is crashing around the planet. Anyways, Doug Ford said, I'm going to quote him, "We need data, and I always make a judgment that's evidence-based." So he is refusing to take the recommendations from his own health officer. It's very, very interesting. Now, he's not being silly about things. I mean, they've lowered the capacity limits of the bars and restaurants. They've limited tables to 6 people. There's earlier closing times. They're doing all kinds of responsible things. And what they're finding actually is if any spiking that's happened is actually of the COVID stuff is happening between staff members and not patrons. So, you know, it's very interesting that we're starting to see governments and state officials and, you know, like we're seeing it in the States, there's a more and more messages that these are unconstitutional lockdowns. You know, we see Sweden and Finland saying masks are useless, to bring you back in, Scott, about masks. We're just seeing something, I think, starting to change. A tide is starting to change, I feel. And I know it's still confusing, but my lesson or my recommendation to people is follow your gut, man. Listen to what something says inside of you, and that's probably the right thing.
I would agree. And I think that that this tide turn happened because of President Trump's bout with the Chinese flu.
Could be, Robert.
And that the tide has now emerged. It's actually it was receding. I think that a lot of these polls are wrong because people are not revealing to pollsters their true feelings. And as you know on the show, I always tell people, tell posters the opposite of what you think. They're only going to use your information against you. Right? So use your own cunning. Most of these polls are loaded with loaded questions. I remember one poll where it was before the 2012 election. And they were trying to make me make a choice between two candidates. And I said, I'm not voting for either one of them. Why should I choose between the two of them? He said, but that's the way this poll is structured. I said, well, you're structuring it to be biased against the candidate that I would. Why don't you offer me 3 candidates? Right? So there are different ways they weasel word the questions. And they skew the sample. The greatest sample, my favorite sample of all time, was after the Hillary Clinton, Donald Trump, the first Trump debate with Clinton. And I and everybody knew that Trump won the debate. But CNN came out and said that 67% of their poll said that Hillary Clinton won. But all the English papers said that Trump had won between 52, 55, some as high as 59, way over Hillary Clinton. And CNN came out and criticized the British papers. So the British papers got really PO'd, and they demanded from CNN to see their sample for their poll. And they revealed to the English papers that they had had a poll sample of 75% Democrats and 25% Republicans. So when they revealed that 67% of the audience had chosen Hillary Clinton, they had actually lost 8 points. You get it? They started off with 75 Democrats against 25 Republicans. And they said the 67% of the audience, that 67 of them thought Clinton won, which means that Trump turned eight of those Democrats to his side. So this is the way they skew statistics. That's why you shouldn't believe any of those statistics. I'm surprised that guy, Steve Kondracki, still has a job at MSNBC, because nobody was more wrong than he was in 2016. So Scott wanted to talk about masks, and I'll leave my dissertation on assassinations for the second hour. And I want to revel. I want to celebrate the federal court decision in Michigan that has liberated the state of Michigan from the clutches of Governor Whitmer. She has, people were calling her a female Hitler. And there's something about her and her black leather coat that strikes me as very, very fascistic. And I'm really glad that she got put in her place. And if you really want to hear a good show tonight, InfoWars, banned videos, InfoWars, David Knight went through a litany of things that she was forbidding. You couldn't go out on a powerboat. You couldn't visit your own. If you had a second house that was more in the country, more secluded, you couldn't visit it. You couldn't shop except at certain stores. You couldn't get a haircut. And that haircut guy, that barber, is the guy who really knocked her off her high horse, right? When he went back to work and he said, it's either a choice of breaking your mandate or starving. And that created a groundswell of support in Michigan that got this case heard. So, federal court in Pennsylvania has declared the lockdown unconstitutional there. Same in Michigan and the same in Texas. So, what the hell's wrong with the rest of the country? When are the people going to wake up?
This Robert, I wanted to add something, Scott, if you just indulge me for a minute. It's very interesting. One of the things that I love to do is sort of watch the ground truth, kind of what's happening around me, to kind of collect, an idea of how this whole COVID and all these alterations in our life are affecting us. Well, this is a very interesting one. So my wife was at a couple of different stores, I guess, over the course of the weekend, and both of these stores had like a pharmacy part to it. So one was a grocery store, which had a pharmacy section. And the other one was more of a pharmacy with, you can buy all kinds of other stuff. And there's like a little mail area there, postal thing. Well, what was very interesting is they were advertising the flu shot in a big way. I've seen some billboards around here showing, the person all masked up and their shoulder exposed and they're getting a needle. Well, in these stores, two different stores, they were saying that if you, in big advertising, if you get your flu shot, you will get loyalty points. Now, this never happens in this particular store for the pharmacy part. When you buy pharmaceutical products there, you never get loyalty points. In the other store, it said, again, very big in advertising as you come through the door, if you get your flu shot, we will give you air miles. And I thought of you, Robert. And then I thought of the CCP social credit system, and I went, wow, here we go. It's not national yet, It's right. not even, but it's starting to happen.
Yes. There's a lot of schemes going around, and I want to talk about one from the United Nations in the second hour. So everybody should have a pen and pencil, or pen and pad, to write down some information I'm going to give you about universal compensation from the United Nations. Very interesting thing that it's amazing to be the nexus of a whole global communications network system, because people send me us information on a daily basis that is staggering. And one of these is with this the reset, the global reset, and how they're trying to engineer that. I'll speak a little bit about that later, but Scott wanted to say something about masks.
Yeah, masks. They've turned into our time's ultimate expression of virtue. Look how virtuous I am. I care. I'm wearing a mask. Well, there was a story that popped up last September on redstate.com, and the title is "The CDC Accidentally Admits Cloth Masks Are Not Effective." Now, the beginning of this story is focused on the poor air quality that the people living in the state of California, and probably Washington and Oregon, and the other places without these fires, the air quality is really terrible, and smoke particulates in the air, it's not very good. Not good stuff to be breathing in. So the story points out that they found something interesting on a CDC webpage. And this is pretty short, and I'll just read it to you. It says, remember that science that they always like to throw in the face of conservatives? Remember that kind of science? Let's take a quick look at this info through the lens of actual science. They just told us that smoke particulates are too small to be stopped by a cloth mask, while N95 masks will protect up to 95% of particulates. 95%, not 100%. They will protect up to 95%, 95% of the particulates down to 0.1 microns in size. A quick Google search will tell us that smoke particles and debris are usually 0.4. Now remember, N95, that's the best mask out there. It'll catch particulates down to 0.1 microns. Smoke particulates and debris is at 0.4 to 0.7 microns in size. According to the CDC, cloth masks are not effective in stopping materials of that size. Another quick Google search will tell us that the Wuhan virus is 0.12 microns in size, about a quarter in size of smoke and fire debris particulates. Even if we factor in for the respiratory droplets that are allegedly to blame for the spread of coronavirus, those droplets are as small as 0.5 microns, or as small or smaller than smoke and fire debris particulates. These factors and figures aren't hidden in some CDC vault that only their scientists are capable of accessing. Yet another quick Google search will show these figures within seconds. The CDC cannot, on one hand, demand that we wear masks because of the protection of the spread of the disease or the droplets containing the disease, and then tell us that those same masks are ineffective in stopping particulates that are bigger than those of the disease that we're trying to prevent. Should you wear a mask while in public? Yes, if anything, to keep the mask holes, like that one, to keep the mask holes in check. Are they effective? The CDC doesn't seem to think so. You can get a pass. No one will bother you. I mean, there's all kinds of masks. There's the N95 masks. They're kind of hard to get these days. And in the early days of the Chinese virus, they were telling the public, don't go out and buy N95 masks, because those should only be used by healthcare professionals. So that left John Q. Public, you and me, to use the paper disposable masks, or you can also get a pass from the mask holes if you just wear one of these cloth mask things that you pull over your head. It almost looks like a bandito mask. There are all kinds of them out there, and they're actually if you got to wear a mask, they are the most comfortable because they breathe and because they're not really filtering out anything. All that they'll do is keep you from getting thrown out of the store, okay? Because there are stores here in Florida when we're in stage three, and we were told by the governor the week before last that don't worry about the masks, blah blah blah. But businesses are still free to be able to make up their own rules. So if a business, for instance, a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, we went to a resort area in Punta Gorda, Florida. It's on the Gulf Coast. It's a beautiful little mall-type place. We had a nice lunch out by the Peace River, and it was really gorgeous. They were walking through the little mall section, all these little tchotchke stores and T-shirt shops and just fun stuff. Every one of the stores in this particular mall area had a sign, a sticker, a decal on the window that said, you must wear a mask in order to come into the store. So they're making up their own rules, which, according to the governor, you're allowed to do. But if I put on my basically ineffective pull-over-my-head bandito mask, I could go into the store, no problem. People for the last 6 months or more, 7 months, have been going to supermarkets without masks. They've been going to Walmart's big box stores without masks, not a problem. But you can't go get a haircut, you can't get your hair done, and you can't go to a place to exercise, well, because of the virus disease. The amount of craziness that's been going on is just over the top. It really is. And we're coming to the top of the hour.
Yes, and so we're coming to the break. This is Revolution Radio, the world's largest listener-sponsored radio network on the internet, and it's for you. Please go to Revolution Radio and make a donation to help keep this station going. The time is now 11:56 and counting down to 11:57. We'll be right back.
Fighters. Fight it then. Fight it with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.
Warning! Warning!
We gotta stop them! They're gonna kill us all!
See how the trouble you've started?
Be they the government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone, or human beings!
A time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart, that you can't take part, you can't even passively take part, and you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop, and you've got to win the day to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported talk radio station, throwing ourselves upon the gears of the machine. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
You called down the thunder, well now you've got it.
Right. You tell them I'm coming, and hell's coming with me, you hear? Hell's coming with me!
Revolution Radio!
Many years from now, would you be willing to trade all the days from this day to that for one chance, just one chance, to come back here and tell our enemies that they may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom!
The future is uncertain, I know this. Death is inevitable, I know this. But one thing is certain, as free men, it is our right to live unencumbered and in peace. And those times are quickly drawing to an end. And in these times, peace is certainly an illusion. And as the chains grow tighter, our ability to slip those chains increase incrementally with every passing moment. Inaction is no longer an option. It's time to raise our voices like a cacophony of thunder and lightning and tell the masters no more. And this is Nighthawk, and I say, for myself, no more. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, because the freedom is slipping away.
We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of
more... Be quiet.
I order you to be quiet.
Look, you stupid bastard. You've got no arms left.
Yes, I have.
Look.
It's just a flesh wound.
I don't believe I've seen such a display of courage, skill, nerve, grace, stupidity.
I'll do you for that.
What?
Come here.
What are you going to do, bleed on me?
I'm invincible.
You're a loony.
The Black Knight always triumphs.
Roundtable Live Monday through Friday, 1 a.m. till 4 a.m. Eastern Time. Bring your mind, bring your ideas, bring your voice. King Arthur had nothing on us. Here, Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. All right. Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And yeah, we're going to get back to your host.
It's great to hear that roar, the loving adulation of the revolutionary audience waiting for the show to get back. What show is this? This is The Right Stuff. And today we're dedicating our show to the speedy recovery of the man with the right stuff, President Donald Trump, who has had a bout with coronavirus and has, as I said, kicked its butt in 4 days. Let's hope he maintains his strength. I will say this before I play this song for you, in keeping with the political season and the political theme. I saw something stronger in him today than I've ever seen before. President Trump has changed, and when I saw him standing on the veranda giving the salute, he saluted the helicopter that delivered him to his home. I saw a strength in him that I'd never seen before. And I think it's that strength that comes to a person when they have had a close encounter with their maker and the realization comes that we are all mortal. And I wish him well, and I'm proud of him, and I am intrigued by the strength, the power that I saw in him today. We'll see what coming days bring. But right now, let's enjoy some of the music, as I say, of the political season, and we'll listen to King Cotton. Whoa. Oh, a slight technical difficulty. It's called the volume. Thank you. Another wonderful song from John Philip Sousa, who was the leader of the U.S. Marine Corps band. I don't think that was mentioned before when we went through his bio. And that film, Stars and Stripes, is worth seeing. It has it's quite an interesting story, lifer in the U.S. Marines. And his music was not appreciated at first. This is the irony that... those people had tin ears and they didn't hear the beauty of his marches right away. But right now I would like to turn to the man of the hour. President Trump has heard our thanks, our thoughts, our prayers. And he put out a message for all of us. He put out two while he was in the hospital. So here is the President of the United States.
I want to begin by thanking all of the incredible medical professionals, the doctors, the nurses, everybody. At Walter Reed Medical Center, I think it's the finest in the world, for the incredible job they've been doing. I came here, wasn't feeling so well. I feel much better now. We're working hard to get me all the way back. I have to be back because we still have to make America great again. We've done an awfully good job of that, but we still have steps to go and we have to finish that job. And I'll be back. I think I'll be back soon. And I look forward to finishing up the campaign the way it was started and the way we've been doing, the kind of numbers that we've been doing. We've been so proud of it. But this was something that happened, and it's happened to millions of people all over the world, and I'm fighting for them, not just in the U.S. I'm fighting for them all over the world. We're going to beat this coronavirus or whatever you want to call it, and we're going to beat it soundly. So many things have happened. If you look at the therapeutics, which I'm taking right now, some of them, and others are coming out soon that are looking like, frankly, they're miracles, if you want to know the truth. They're miracles. People criticize. So I just want to tell you that I'm starting. You don't know, over the next period of a few days, I guess that's the real test. So we'll be seeing what happens over those next couple of days. I just want to be so thankful for all of the support I've seen, whether it's on television or reading about it. I most of all appreciate what's been said by the American people, by almost a bipartisan consensus of American people. It's a beautiful thing to see, and I very much appreciate it, and I won't forget it. I promise you that. I also want to thank the leaders of the world for their condolences, and they know what we're going through. They know what, as your leader, what I have to go through. But I had no choice because I just didn't want to stay in the White House. I was given that alternative. Stay in the White House, lock yourself in, don't ever leave, don't even go to the Oval Office. Just stay upstairs and enjoy it. Don't see people, don't talk to people, and just be done with it. And I can't do that. I had to be out front. And this is America. This is the United States. This is the greatest country in the world. This is the most powerful country in the world. I can't be locked up in a room upstairs and totally safe and just say, hey, whatever happens, happens. I can't do that. We have to confront problems. As a leader, you have to confront problems. There's never been a great leader that would have done that. So that's where it is. I'm doing well. I want to thank everybody. Our First Lady is doing very well. Melania asked me to say something as to the respect that she has for our country, the love that she has for our country. And we're both doing well. Melania is really handling it very nicely. As you've probably read, she's slightly younger than me, just a little tiny bit. And therefore, just we know the disease, we know the situation with age versus younger people, and Melania is handling it statistically like it's supposed to be handled. And that makes me very happy, and it makes the country very happy. But I'm also doing well, and I think we're going to have a very good result. Again, over the next few days, we're going to probably know for sure. So I just want to thank everybody out there, everybody, all over the world, specifically the United States. The outpouring of love has been incredible. I will never forget. Thank you very much. I want to begin.
It's true. The outpouring of love has been amazing. But there was one outpouring from outside the United States that touched me more deeply than any other one. When I heard that Kim Jong-un had sent him his sincere sympathies and condolences, I realized what President Trump has achieved. You know, the last meeting that they had was not a happy campers meeting. That was when the president walked out because they started double talking. And he left Kim Jong-un and his top general in the room with Mike Pompeo and I think Robert O'Brien, the his assistant there. And Kim Jong-un and his top general got a dressing down in the military sense because he let loose Pompeo on how to treat people that back up on, you know, welch on deals. That's the way Trump would think about it. But for him to receive a telegram or a message from Kim Jong-un wishing him well, I think is extremely significant and shows you how far-reaching his peace initiatives have gone. And so I'd like to ask you guys for comment. We're going to have another word from the president. He did give a second message while he was still in Walter Reed. We'll play that a little bit later. But I'd like to hear reactions from Scott and Dan.
You think President Trump will get a get well card from Chairman Xi?
No.
No.
But you know what's funny? I did a. Listen, we're involved in one of the most serious things that any civilization has ever faced, so we have to laugh. I did a satire. I kind of pushed a satire of Chairman Xi Jinping. And what it was a caricature of Xi Jinping's face with a crown, except it was a pun. Corona means crown, right? So they were saying that Xi Jinping was the king of China. So some really smart graphics artist put Xi Jinping's face on the coronavirus, and it said Xi Jinping just has found his crown. So I put it out, but I put it out with my little ditty, which is, today I'm turning Xi Jinping into Xi Jinping. And I sent that out on Twitter. You won't believe it. I'm getting hundreds of messages in Chinese.
It's just too easy.
But listen, the phone every day rings about 3 or 4 times a day. And there's a Chinese voice on there either saying, I have a package from DHL, or some Chinese girl is in love with me from China. I haven't been able to decipher the accent. It's very interesting. I can distinguish several different Chinese accents. You know, they're not all the same. So anyway, that's my humor. I turned Xi Jinping into Xi Jinping. So I don't think he might have, you know, through the ambassador. I think it. They're not making any use.
Ping pong.
And maybe Andrew, what did you think? I was very moved. I was very touched by this message from the president. You could see he was under duress. You could feel it. And the quaver in his voice actually came out when he was speaking about Melania. We haven't heard about her from her situation. But that's what, you see, he was more concerned in this little piece, if you hear it again. Listen to it. He was more concerned about her than he is about himself. And I think that reflects the type of man he is. So, Andrew, what do you think of seeing this president from the great Northwest?
Well, again, Robert, I know we talked about this yesterday in the show, and we've been sort of bouncing this tennis ball, you know, this ping pong ball back and forth across the table, as it were. I think he had something. I think it probably was this COVID, and I think that he, how do I put it? Robert, he's been able to grab, unwittingly dominate and grab every headline across the planet. Mm-hmm. If he wasn't already like the biggest story this side of our solar system, well, he certainly is now. And we talked about this. There's almost like this, I'm going to go there. There's almost like a divine intervention of some sort, man. It's like he gets this virus. He gets over it really quick. He's basically trolled it. And yeah, he's moved on. It's like if there's something that's working to help us go forward, because we're in an icky time. And it's worse. I mean, I have a whole lot of other notes that I was going to bring up, and we don't have to do that tonight, of little subtleties that are happening in our, again, within our communities, in our societies, in our schools, little changes that have been slipped in under this, again, the smokescreen of COVID-19 or the coronavirus. So, and I think, you know, what's really interesting in the debate was when the president talked about, I'm going to come back to masks again, you guys, where he says, you know, I wear a mask. I'll wear a mask at the right time. And but he really doesn't wear it. And Robert, if you'll indulge me for a minute, I'd like to retouch on what Scott has brought up about masks. Is that okay? Okay, I shared this article with you. I'm going to post it to the show page on your Facebook page. The writer's name is Steve Barwick. He wrote this May 19th this past year. And the website is called haveyenotread.com. So he's a religious guy. He's a Christian guy. And even if you're not sort of that persuasion, I really think that his article is very interesting. And I'll read the title, and I'm going to read a couple quotes that really refer to what President Trump, I think, has been kind of putting aside and what Scott was talking about. So the title is Occult Ritual Transformation and Coronavirus: How Mask Wearing, Hand Washing, Social Separation, and Lockdowns Are Age-Old Occult Rituals Being Used to Initiate People into a New Global Order. And I know that goes to the conspiracy theories, but the problem is these theories are fast becoming conspiracy facts when we listen to these non-elected world leaders like the Pope, like the UN Secretary General, like the WHO Secretary. They are repeating from the Prince Charles did a whole number, I think, this past either in the weekend or in the end of last week, talking about how humanity has to change, yada yada yada. I want to read to you a couple of paragraphs here, and then specifically to what Scott was talking about in terms of masks and what I think Donald Trump is fully aware of and is trying to avoid. Anyways, here it is. So with many of the world's top-tier leaders pushing occultism, this is from the article, including those enemies of Christ, again, he's Christian, who run the four hidden dynasties of politics, education, economics, and religion, it should come as no surprise to you that the entire global coronavirus crisis is replete with occult symbology and ritual occult initiation themes. And I'm going to stop there before I go on. At the end of the debate between Biden and President Trump, you saw Melania come up. She didn't have a mask. She very openly, you know, held her husband, and there came up Biden's wife, and she was masked up. It was amazing to see the contrast.
Yes, she was.
Yeah, indeed. As you'll see throughout the rest of this commentary, and I'm not going to read it. I recommend people read this. It's very interesting. The entire manufactured coronavirus crisis is one giant occult ritual from start to finish, divided up into four mini rituals, each with a distinct occult purpose of initiation and transformation of the world and its people into a new global order. He outlines four things that we're all kind of going through in one way or another for the last 7 to 8 months. Number one, ritual mask wearing. Number two, ritual hand washing. Number three, ritual social distancing. And number four, ritual lockdowns. Now, I specifically want to read a few quotes and these are actually from the Encyclopedia Britannica. It's very, very interesting in regards to mask wearing. Let me read this one part about – no, I'll read that last. The Encyclopedia Britannica goes on to say about mask ritual. Usually – here's the quote. Usually, however, the wearer skillfully becomes a partner of the character he is impersonating, giving to the mask not only an important spark of vitality by the light flashing from his own eyes, but also bringing it alive by his movements and poses. In other words, in the end, the mask becomes part of the very identity of those who wear it. The occult transformation becomes complete. The new you is born from ritual. The Encyclopedia Britannica further states, but often the wearer of the mask seems to become psychologically one with the character he is helping to create. He seems to become an automaton without his own will, which has become subservient to that of the personage of the mask. And one more quote from the Britannica. The person who wears the mask is also considered to be in direct association with the mask's spirit force and is consequently exposed to like personal danger of being affected by it. Upon donning the mask, the wearer sometimes undergoes a psychic change and, as in a trance, assumes the spirit character depicted by the mask. So what he's talking about is literally an alchemy of the human, changing into something else. And I think President Trump has been very deliberately aware of this, or deliberately putting aside the mask, not to endanger him, others and himself and all this, but because he knows the deeper implications of this. That's my conjecture, guys, but I think he's onto it.
I agree. The psychological impact of the mask is one of the worst. One of the worst things that I have seen, one of the worst effects on our nation and on children. This is the thing. Seeing children in strollers, I think these children are going to be psychologically damaged because of this trauma. The other thing is oxygen deprivation. Wearing a mask deprives you of 3% oxygen. And over a long period of time, let's say after a couple of months, you will be suffering oxygen depletion as if you hadn't breathed for 2 or 3 days. People are having accidents wearing masks in cars. I couldn't last 2 minutes in a limo that we took to go to a family function last week. I sat behind the driver and I just took it off. I didn't think I'd make it, you know, conscious. I'd be groggy and I would think delirious after an hour of driving in a car. And yet people are doing it left and right all over the place.
Some people wear it all day long, not out of any kind of personal fear, but just they're required to. You know, they work at a supermarket or wherever. You got to wear a mask. And that's that.
I had a cable technician come in today to set up a new cable set up in this other room, and the fellow wore it from the time he walked in to the time he walked out, which was maybe an hour and 15 minutes. And I said to him, you know, how many of these jobs do you do per day? I figured 2 in the morning, 2 at night, or the afternoon. And I said, well, 4, 5? He said, 9.
Oh.
9 cable installations a day, and he's in that mask all the time. I've gotten tired of trying to tell people, you know, it's become very entrenched, you know.
I found today a very interesting document on the CDC.gov's website, and it's titled How to Select, Wear, and Clean Your Mask. Now, this is interesting. In the section here on how to select, it says, do choose masks that, these are all illustrated. It looks like I'm looking at a children's book because of the illustrations are cute, but you know, they simplify it that much. Do choose masks that, number one, have 2 or more layers of washable, breathable fabric. That completely choose a mask that completely covers your nose and your mouth. Choose a mask to fit snugly against the sides of your face and don't have gaps. Do not choose a mask that are made of fabric that makes it hard to breathe. For example, vinyl. Can you imagine breathing through a vinyl mask? Do not choose a mask that has exhalation valves or vents which allow virus particulates to escape. I've seen people wearing those things. They look kind of cool, you know, like, well, what's that on the two things on the side? They're little vents. I guess they're more comfortable to wear, but you know, you're venting out your exhaust. And also, do not choose masks that are intended for healthcare workers, including N95 respirators or surgical masks. It issues a caution on gaiters and face shield. That's gate, G-A-I-T-E-R-S, gaiters. Gaiters are the kinds of masks that I was referring to, that you basically slip it, it's all fabric, slip it over your head, and it sort of like drapes down your neck. I call it the bandito mask. It says here the evaluation on gaiters is ongoing, but the effectiveness is unknown at this time. My guess is that they're probably not effective at all. That's why they're so relatively comfortable. The other thing that they caution on is face shields, and you're starting to see these advertised on television. Evaluation is ongoing, but the effectiveness is unknown at this time. Doesn't seem too effective to me, but hey, what do you know? Scroll down a little bit. There's a section here of how to wear a mask. Wear a mask correctly and consistently for the best protection. Point number one, be sure to wash your hands before putting on a mask. Nobody does that. Point number two, do not touch the mask when wearing it. Nobody does that. Section here says, do wear a mask that covers your nose and mouth and secure it under your chin. And point number two, do wear a mask that fits snugly against the sides of your face. When you wear a mask that fits snugly, when you breathe in, you're just breathing in your own hot air. It's absolutely totally uncomfortable. Now, for people who, you know, are, I don't know, contrarians or whatever, sometimes you see people wearing their masks in the following ways. It says, do not wear a mask around your neck. It's going to help your neck. On your forehead, under your nose. I've seen people do that. You get tired of breathing in hot air. And some people, they just take that thing and they pull it down over the nose just so you can get a breath of fresh air. And they're saying, don't wear it under your nose. Don't wear it only on your nose. I haven't seen that one yet. Don't wear it on your chin. Don't wear it on your arm. That's really? I'm shocked. And here's one that Joe Biden never got the memo on. It says, don't wear one dangling from one ear. I see him do this all the time. Now, they also have a section here about how to take off your mask. See, wearing a mask is actually rather complicated. It's not just as simple as, well, you just grab a mask, stick it on your face, and you go on your merry way. How to take off your mask? It says, number one, carefully untie the strings behind your head or stretch over the ear loops. Number two, handle only by the ear loops or ties. In other words, don't touch the surface of the mask. Number three, fold the outside corners together. And then number four, be careful not to touch your eyes, nose, and mouth when removing and washing hands immediately after removing your mask. Section on how to clean your masks. Yeah, that's right, folks. You either get disposable ones or you got to clean your mask. That's another thing on your to-do list. So I clean your mask every day. Masks should be washed regularly. Always remove masks correctly and wash your hands after handling or touching your used diseased germ-ridden mask. Include your mask with your regular laundry. But I only launder once a week, you know, to clean my pair of underwear, you know, this week's underwear. Also, use regular laundry detergent in the warmest appropriate water setting for cloth used to make your mask. And number three, use the highest heat setting and leave in the dryer until completely dry. So there you have it. You know, wearing mask is tricky business. You got to be very careful when you wear these things. Otherwise, they're basically useless. Even if you know an insider and you're actually able to score some N95 masks that you're not supposed to have, especially if you're not a healthcare professional, even if you're wearing an N95 mask, if you're not cleaning it, if you're touching it, if you don't put it on, you don't take it off correctly, you're going to contaminate your mask And if you really believe this mask is going to be saving you, you got to follow the directions on these things. But I never hear anybody talking about, I never hear anybody in the media talking about what's the proper way to put on a mask, take off a mask, how do you maintain a mask? What am I supposed to do with this thing on my face when my face itches like crazy? Grin and bear it? And the answer is, yeah. Or if you have to touch your mask, pull a tissue out of a box and then put the tissue between your grubby hands and your mask before you go touching and adjusting your mask. But you know no one's ever going to do that. So this whole business about wearing masks is really a canard. It's something to keep you busy over. They're largely ineffective. They're very easy to misuse and mishandle. And all I can say is that when this is all over and done with, you know what I'm going to do with my masks? I'm going to burn them.
Like burning bras.
I was going to
I haven't done that yet, but I think if I did, I'd be in trouble with the missus.
In the cold weather, I wear the full head. It's kind of like a ninja mask. That's actually what it was when I started. And then I ordered one from China, which has a cover over the mouth and the nose, and it fully covers the head. They're actually quite good in winter.
I used to ride motorcycles a lot, and I always, from the time I got my first motorcycle, I got my first motorcycle helmet, I always wore a full-face motorcycle helmet. And actually wearing a mask is drastically more uncomfortable than wearing a full-face motorcycle helmet, because when you're in the wind, the ambient air, you know, just flows around the inside of your full-face helmet. You know, it makes it well. Let's put it this way: I rode motorcycles consistently for about 7 years, put a lot of miles on, and as long as I was moving, I didn't mind wearing the helmet at all. It was, I was used to it. But when you come up to traffic lights in the summertime, you just couldn't wait for that light to go green so you could get in the air, get the wind, get some air in that helmet and cool it off a little bit. But masks, oh my God. The first time I had to have a medical test done, and my wife and I went into this place, and they looked at her and they said, "You can't come in. Only the patients are allowed in." Okay, so she had to wait in the car. And when I walked in, they said, "You have to put it." They gave me a mask, said, "You must put this mask on," because I had to go back in this place to get prepped in order to do this test thing. As soon as they put the mask on, now, if you've been in a medical establishment lately or a hospital, you know that they're practically refrigerated. These places are really cold. I think the ambient air temperature in most hospitals now is about 65 degrees or maybe a little bit lower. Doesn't take – if you go to a hospital, even to go visit or you know, do anything in there, bring a sweater, bring a jacket because you're going to need it. Well, so I went into this place to get this test done. As soon as I walked in, it's heavily air conditioned. Put the mask on and I felt as if I was still outside and it was a warm, humid day. And that's what my experience of wearing a mask is like. It's like being outside on a warm, humid day. You're constantly breathing in warm, humid air, only it's your own exhaust.
Yeah. Well, I think the most important thing about the masks is when you take the box home is to read the box before you open it. And the first sentence says, "This mask will not protect you against COVID-19, coronavirus, or any other flus or illnesses." I've sent that box around. That's the first sentence. It promises you it will not protect you against COVID-19. So again, I believe it's more of a psychological tool that they're using to destroy individual self-image. And the mask, you were quite insightful, Andrew, in discussing the mask and the transformation. You know, in shamanism, that's why shamans wear masks.
Yes.
In order to efface their normal egos and allow another personality to emerge. Yes. And it can be very good or it can be very bad. And some people become attached to the mask. They identify. They change their identity. That's one of the things that bothers me. I see a lot of people embracing the mask as a new identity, and their old identities are going by the wayside.
Well, guys, have you seen this new, very popular television show? And it's actually kind of fun. The Masked Singer.
I haven't seen it, but I've seen the commercial.
Well, it's actually quite interesting because they dress up. You, the audience, and the panel there are trying to figure out. It's kind of like What's My Line, that old game show. Only all the people up on the stage are wearing these outrageous costumes with enormous head masks on, and they all when they have their outfit on, they are required to sing. Now, some of the people that do this are real professional singers, and others are just sports guys and celebrities who, you know, kind of sort of want to sing. Sarah Palin was on one time last month, and they go through this process of elimination, and then finally, when every night one of the masked singers is going to have to leave, and when they decide, you know, which one got the fewest votes, okay, you know, masked singer number three, you got to leave. So they step forward. And then the audience starts saying, "Take it off, take it off, take it off," you know, and they just get, the audience gets more and more whipped up, and they finally take off the mask, and you get to see who the masked singer was, and you never know, you know, whether it's going to be a guy or a gal. And one time we happened to be watching this thing, and this person pulls this thing off, and I said, "Oh my God, it's Sarah Palin." I didn't know, she didn't sing too bad. And one of the contestants said, "You know, I kind of like wearing this outfit because it's not me, and I get to be a singer."
Yeah.
With a mask, you can take on a different identity. You can be another person, very much like what actors do. You know, a skilled actor, like a skilled stage actor, a character actor, they don't care what the part is, but, you know, it could be, well, this week I'm going to be playing the old Civil War general. You know, the retired old general, and they get into their character, and especially when they get the makeup and the wig on and the whole thing and the outfit, psychologically they become the old general, you know, or whatever that role is that you're playing. You know, wearing a mask can help, but a lot of times just makeup and outfit clothing will do the trick. But it comes back to this idea of wearing a mask to hide your identity so you can put on a different identity.
Well, that's what Halloween's
I don't quite all know about. How that translates into what we're doing en masse with people wearing masks, but there you go.
Well, and we're coming up to Halloween, Scott. I mean, that's...
Oh, that too.
Totally.
Yeah, it's like Halloween. You know, you could put... like, I was a pretty reserved kid, you know, but when I put on a mask at Halloween, you can sort of, like, act out a little bit. You know,
yeah,
you can
exactly.
Act the candy man. You can act up a little bit because, well, you know, even if I do something outrageous, nobody knows who I am because I got a mask on.
Speaking of Halloween, I'm planning around Halloween time, a week before and the week after, to begin a series of online seminars. One of them will be learning how to navigate the moon. And for the Halloween theme, I will do a program on witchcraft, the paranormal, and the occult. So keep tuned to my Facebook page for notice. This will be a for-profit venture. It'll be about 2 hours long. And in my how to navigate the moon, we'll cover... It's going to be one of four lectures. The first one will be the near side of the moon and learning the general area. Later, we'll go into major craters. And then in the later, more advanced stages of the seminars, we'll be exploring the far side of the moon, which I find to be far more interesting in regard to what has been found there by the Chinese. So if anyone's interested in registering, you can write to me at robert.morningstar@gmail.com. It's going to be a limited participation. But if you're interested in either subject, send me a line and we'll begin the registration process. Right now, I would like to turn back to the president because he gave a second message from Bethesda before he went home. And I think that one's worth listening to. So let us hear once again from the President of the United States.
We're getting great reports from the doctors. This is an incredible hospital, Walter Reed. The work they do is just absolutely amazing, and I want to thank them all, the nurses, the doctors, everybody here. I've also gotten to meet some of the soldiers and the first responders, and What a group. I also think we're going to pay a little surprise to some of the great patriots that we have out on the street. And they've been out there for a long time, and they've got Trump flags, and they love our country. So I'm not telling anybody but you, but I'm about to make a little surprise visit. So perhaps I'll get there before you get to see me. But I just, when I look at the enthusiasm, and we have enthusiasm like probably nobody's ever had. Our people that love the job we're doing, we have more enthusiasm than maybe anybody. So it's been a very interesting journey. I learned a lot about COVID. I learned it by really going to school. This is the real school. This isn't the let's read the book school. And I get it, and I understand it. And it's a very interesting thing, and I'm going to be letting you know about it. In the meantime, we love the USA, and we love what's happening. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. President. We have about 9 minutes, folks, so I'd like to just turn the floor over to Andrew for a little while, and then Scott. And at 11:51, we're going to go into the tornadoes to end the show.
Yeah, Robert. Well, again, I suggest to the listeners, to everybody, is pay attention to the minutiae, to the details. I'll give you a quick example. My son, my 8-year-old son, he's just entered grade 4. It's now in October, and he's already had his first cold, which I caught. And we all, and you know, his teacher said, "My goodness, everybody's getting a cold. It's like returning back to preschool," which, again, circling back to masks, is probably a good reason why we're all getting sick a little bit, is because we haven't been emboldening our immunity by being together and getting herd immunity for all the viruses that we carry around daily. Anyways, one of the classes that he has now regularly on a Wednesday is all about this empathy training that I think I've spoken about. It's called Second Step. It's a program that comes out of Seattle. And the teacher, she's very, very nice, but this is a program that they're pushing from kindergarten to grade 7. And what they're basically saying is that there are no genders. They are now teaching 8- and 9-year-old children and down to kindergarten that doctors, and I quote the video that they were watching, aren't actually necessarily right when they announce that a little boy or a little girl is born. So my son, my older son, who's a lifeguard and swim instructor, was given the new protocols for teaching the Red Cross lessons. The Canadian Red Cross teaches a lot of these safety programs and learn to swim programs. And immediately upon the in-service they had, they were told what they need to start asking children is not only their names, and we're talking about sometimes preschoolers who are as young as 3, but to ask them what their preferred pronoun is, and then to tell the children what your pronoun is. What happened with the days of just asking their name? So what I'm saying is that under this smokescreen, under this guise of this coronavirus 1984, are a whole lot of things coming in to literally not only create a transformation in the community, but an alchemy of humanity. And we need to take care. And I think that Donald Trump, I think he's aware of it. I think his team is aware of it. And I support him all the way, even though I'm Canadian. I just believe that without him and without, again, like I say, the lamplight of the United States, if it breaks, we're on a downward trend, a darkness that we've never seen before. And I perish the thought for that. So keep going, President Trump. Be well and fight strong.
Live long and prosper.
Yeah.
As the Vulcans say.
I can't believe you just said that. Live long and prosper. Because I wanted to wrap this up with some fun stuff. And I wanted to tell you guys that we got a monthly subscription to CBS Access so that we could watch the new Star Trek series, Picard. And I got to tell you, it is absolutely outstanding. Really? They did. So we've only gotten into, I think, the 3rd or 4th episode, and it is just brilliant. Patrick Stewart is just perfect. It's as if he was born to be Jean-Luc Picard. The series picks up about 20 years or so after Picard has retired to the Chateau Picard winery in France, and he's bored out of his gourd. And he just gets back into space. It's fun stuff. It really is fun stuff. Picard. The other thing I wanted to share with you, we so also got. I was about to talk about Star Trek, and you said live long and prosper.
Well, Scott, I got to add something really quick. I don't mean to take your time, but this article just came out from Washington State University. It's called "Some Planets May Be Better for Life Than Earth," and a study done by the university and the scientist, we'll get his name, in the journal Astrobiology details characteristics of potential superhabitable planets, which include those that are older, a little larger, slightly warmer, and possibly wetter than Earth. They're like 100 light years away, and they're saying they're more suitable for life than Earth. It's very interesting that you should bring up Star Trek.
Really?
The other fun thing that we came upon, and we were able to access this through through the CBS deal, is a movie called Strange Angel. It's the Jack Parsons story. You know, Jack Parsons, JPL Laboratories, Jack Parsons Lab, that rocket guy. I started reading a book several years ago called Sex and Rockets that was all about Jack Parsons. And here's the premise of the TV series. Strange Angel follows Jack Parsons, a brilliant and ambitious blue-collar worker of 1930s Los Angeles, who started as a janitor at a chemical factory but had fantastical dreams that led him to the birth of the unknown discipline of American rocketry. Along the way, he fell into a mysterious world that included sex magic rituals at night, and he became a disciple of occultist Aleister Crowley. Parsons used Crowley's teachings of self-actualization to support his unimaginable and unprecedented endeavor to the stars. When I was reading about Jack Parsons in the book Sex and Rockets, the author pointed out that Parsons was quite fascinated with Aleister Crowley and used to write him long, detailed letters. Crowley thought he was a nut. He thought this guy's a wacko guy. The other thing about Jack Parsons that was rather curious, and they haven't gotten to it yet in the series, was he was very, very good friends with L. Ron Hubbard, the creator of Scientology. So Jack Parsons, what a guy.
Really?
So far, so good. We've only seen one episode. The art direction and everything is just brilliant. It looks fantastic. And the guy that they got to play Jack Parsons so far is doing a great job. But it looks like it's going to be a fun series. Strange Angel, CBS Access.
Very good. Now, I mentioned earlier, this is going to be a very quick spiel. I mentioned earlier you should have your pen and pad or your whatever your writing implement is. And write this down, UNCF-UNCC.org. Hey, I feel like Captain Video or Captain Midnight. He used to give the code, secret code word at the end of the show for next week's episode. Ovaltine. That's what we need, Ovaltine. Okay, Captain Video, Captain Midnight, actually. Write this down, UNCF-UNCC.org. That stands for United Nations Compensation Funds Portal. And this is the reset. So get an early start. Okay, here's what it says. Thank you for taking the time to surf our website. Before you proceed, you should know the pandemic is real, so please continue to stay safe and stay home if you can. Well, there's no way to tell exactly what the economic damage from the global COVID-19 novel coronavirus pandemic China flu will be. There is widespread agreement among economists that it will have a severe negative impact on the global economy. The pandemic is having a noticeable impact on global economic growth. Estimates so far indicate the virus could trim global economic growth by as much as 2% per month if current conditions persist. Global trade could also fall by 13% to 32%, depending on the depth and the extent of the global economic downturn. The full impact will not be known until the effects of the pandemic peak. As a result, the United Nations Compensation Funds, under the United Nations Compensation Committee, have launched this compensation portal to help boost the world economy again and reduce poverty even after the COVID-19. What I'm telling you is that they're offering you a card preloaded with a certain amount of money that they are going to compensate us for this terrible loss that has been inflicted upon all of us. And they ask only your name, your occupation, gender, age, telephone number, email, your postal address, and they ask you, how is the COVID-19 there? And that's the submission form. So I decided to be a guinea pig for all of you, and I filled it out and see what comes, but I find it very interesting. And if the United Nations is willing to pay us off for all the damage they've done, hey, less power to them and more money to us. So
you know what you're going to get? You're going to get a coupon for Starbucks. That's what they're going to send you.
It's actually, now what they describe, a preloaded card that you can use to pay your rent. We'll see. Let's play the game, man.
Yeah. Remember, there's no free lunch.
There's no free lunch, and I'm not giving them my
credit. It's free to get in. You pay to get out.
Okay, it's time to say goodnight. Tune in next week, folks. We will be returning to the Battle of Britain and the development of rocketry.
All right. Let's blast off, guys.
We're going to blast off right now with the Tornadoes, folks. This is our theme song, thanks to Scott Tevers, who insisted on it being our theme song, and I've had it. I've cherished it, but I was never going to take it on. But here it is. This is the theme of The Right Stuff. The Tornadoes. Telstar.
Thank you.
Good night, folks. This is The Right Stuff. Join us next week for the V1 and the V2 and the continuation of the winning of the Battle of Britain. This is Revolution Radio, and this is Robert Morningstar, Scott Teeters, and Andrew Curry wishing you good night, and thank you for joining us.
Revolution Radio.